This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and we're back with the next Get Rich Quick scheme offered you by courtesy of AI, blockchain, quantum computing, and everything else.
All of the keywords in there, just for the AI overlords that are obviously training on us. I don't think we have mentioned that.
Since I don't know what you're talking about, I'm going to say no, we haven't mentioned it yet.
Okay, so interesting diversion. Jon noticed some curious behavior in our download stats a little while back. We normally have, I would say, gentle, steady growth. Like, this is not a podcast that, has massive, wide stonks appeal or something like that. For you out there, our valued and trusted and genuinely wonderful listeners, we thank you from the very bottom of our hearts for continuing to listen to this, probably nonsense at this point. But anyway, Jon noticed a really interesting pattern. And when we started digging into it, we only really have these kind of inspecting our data sessions fairly infrequently, I would say, when something weird happens. And we noticed that our entire back catalog was being downloaded over and over and over again.
When you say over thousands of times.
Yeah. Yeah. Wild. And we did a little bit digging around on where those requests were coming from. And correct me if I'm wrong, Jon, but I seem to remember it was they were basically all coming from Facebook/Meta. Yeah. And the initial sort of guess that I think you had, Jon, was that maybe one of our episodes had gone viral and people had started to listen through Facebook or had gone through Facebook or something like that. And I don't think the download pattern to me didn't sound quite right for that.
And it wouldn't be technically correct, because even if they shared a link on Facebook, whatever, it would still download from my server, from the IP address, from the user. And Facebook doesn't cache us or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So my theory is that that Facebook is actually doing a lot of training of their AI models for voices on, yes, you guessed it, podcasts. Namely, I mean, maybe they're doing it with everybody, but obviously we don't have access to everybody else's download stats. So if in the far flung future, your AI overlords start talking to you with the voices of either Jon or myself, or maybe some kind of horrific combination of the two of us, you're welcome, I guess.
I was going to say, we're sorry, but anyway.
Oh, dear. So, yeah, I couldn't remember whether we'd shared that. I don't think we have. Apologies, audience, if you've heard this before. I don't think we'd shared that yet. No, we found this out. Yeah, so we found that out a couple of months ago. Thought we'd share it with you all. Thought it was kind of funny. Let us know if you have any other wild conspiracy theories. Like, let us know. We'll put the tinfoil hats on and we'll read them out. I thought that was hilarious, but
Hilarious, but also serious, because they totally disregarded our robots.txt file.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's a little bit scary as well, but like,
Facebook. Scary.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for that robocaller that sounds just like myself calling me. Anyway, that's not what this episode's about, although it is quite funny. This episode, as Jon mentioned, is all about the Get Rich Quick scheme. No, wait a minute, it's not. It's about what can you buy next? No, it's not.
Now, what has been bought before?
Yeah, or what might be bought in the future, maybe. So all of this cryptic nonsense. We were inspired, maybe inspired is not quite the right word.
We wanted to be inspired by until we read it.
Yeah. There was an article on Quartz, quartz.com, QZ.com, about mega tech IPOs could finally come in 2025, which does sound like quite an interesting article. But I'll save you the bother of having to read the article, because there's basically nothing in it. It's a lot of words that don't say anything.
Probably written by an AI.
Yeah, certainly co-written by ChatGPT. But it did get us thinking about the fact that the markets and the world, the tech world at least, has shifted a lot in this last less than 12 months. And, you know, it got us thinking about the world of not just, you know, the IPOs that this was talking about. But obviously, we've had a lot of mergers / acquisitions in the past year. And some of them, you know, fairly substantial. And we thought it was worth discussing the topic, as they say.
But just before we do, official warning, this is not investment advice. We have no idea what we're talking about. Please don't do anything based on stuff you hear on this podcast.
Unless you make a huge amount of money, in which case we take 10% each. Yeah, exactly. So, none of your losses, only your gains. Thank you. We can give back to you. Join our Patreon. Anyway, with that, we're going to divide this up a little bit into like the mergers and acquisitions first, and then we'll get on to talking about the IPOs. So I think for me, it's fairly unsurprising that the last couple of years, the merger sort of market has been a little bit dampened by what's going on in the world. Not as badly dampened as the IPO market, but mergers definitely had slowed down, I would say. Over the last kind of maybe 2 years, picking up at the start of this year.
It's picking up now, but I think it kind of slowed down due to COVID, because COVID is such a crazy period that you couldn't do any long-term bets anymore. Companies are investing money left, right, and center, adding more people, and other companies going bankrupt. It was a very unstable time. And I think last year we kind of recovered from that chaos a little bit, and things started running again. And I actually think it got accelerated by the horrible things happening, war-wise in the world today. And it accelerated because of the wars there, because some companies got into big problems. A lot of boycotting happening to Russia. So some people got money from Russian investors. I mean, it's a big part of the world. Don't underestimate that. And that, I think, actually was able to accelerate. So we recovered from COVID. And then this happened, and that accelerated. Okay, we need to solidify, conglomerate, whatever the things.
Yeah. I mean, for most of these, there are four major events that I think we're talking about. So the first is the Cisco acquisition of Splunk that happened in March 2024. The second one is Broadcom's acquisition of VMware that happened, 1 month later in April. Then, another big one, the IBM acquisition of HashiCorp, again towards the end of April. And then in May, Wiz acquired Lacework, a smaller player, but still, a well-known player in the market. To me, these are quite different. So the Splunk and Cisco, VMware, Broadcom, HashiCorp, IBM. Splunk, Cisco, to me, Splisco? Skunk?
Cisco.
No.
Cisco. Skunk, yeah. It's a nice one.
So to me, the Cisco Splunk was more about Cisco buying into a market that they were already present in but wanted to deepen their experience. Like, Cisco acquired AppDynamics a long time ago, and that sort of really established them in the APM space, and sort of I see Splunk as filling in that observability and fleshing out a lot more of the InfoSec and cyber side of things. Now, Jan is shaking his head furiously if you're and waving his beard, which is kind of fun. So, yeah, join us on YouTube if you want to see that. So you obviously disagree with that. So what is your disagree with that?
Cisco disagrees with you because they put the PR statement out that they did it to deepen their foundations into artificial intelligence, obviously.
Oh, God.
Come on. But no, I totally agree with you and not with the marketing.
Yeah. The surprising, well, we'll get onto this as we go through. But like Broadcom and VMware, to me, this one is Broadcom, like, I don't really hate to say it. But basically just buying their way into desperately trying to stay relevant. Like Broadcom, you know, legacy, they're mainly known as being a legacy hardware vendor, or at least I know them mainly as a legacy hardware vendor. I'm sure they're known by other people for other things. But to me, their acquisition of VMware is just, you know, desperately trying to stay relevant, keep up with the cool kids. What do you think? Is that valid? Well, do you think something different going on?
If you mean relevant in the way of people know who we are, because Broadcom chips are pretty much everywhere still, so it's not like they're going away anywhere. But I think that they were trying to get some filthy services money. Because being a hardware manufacturer, I have no idea, but I think is not a very good place to be these days, unless if you're NVIDIA and you have the one chip that everybody wants. The margins are razor thin, there's a lot of competition in there. And on the other hand, software and services, definitely, that's a cash cow you can keep on milking for eternity. Now, remind me, did Broadcom get VMware from Dell, or was VMware already divested from Dell before they acquired it? I think that already happened, right?
Yeah, they got split out separately, yeah.
Because I think that this is a VMware looking for someone to buy them as well. Because I don't think they were very happy when they divested from Dell. That was intentional. Dell apparently for some reason decided that VMware didn't make them enough money or whatever. And that chunked them out again. And VMware was kind of, we need somebody, I don't know.
Yeah, I think, I haven't done the research on this. I've done the research on the other things. But from my very fundamentally flawed memory, I think it was part of when, wasn't it part and parcel or part of the whole changes that happened when Dell went back to being a private company?
Then they divested VMware.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was before this acquisition.
Oh, yeah. But that's what I mean. Like that divestment was part of the overall plan there. Yeah. Okay. And then the next one, which obviously caused a fairly sizable stir, I would say, was IBM's acquisition of HashiCorp. Now, $6.4 billion, there's always a... HashiCorp obviously famously was very much an open source company early on, and then recent license changes followed by acquisition by IBM. Now, again, you can get your tinfoil hat out and place it on your head and decide whether you think that they made the license changes to make themselves more attractive to IBM, whether they were going to do it anyway, whether things are totally unrelated and the timing was just happenstance, or whether or not actually it was a complete cock up and maybe they, if they'd known that was going to happen, they wouldn't have changed their license. I don't know. But the reason that IBM made that acquisition that they publicly stated was that it was all to do with cloud and cloud infrastructure and that sort of thing, which both makes sense and doesn't make sense at the same time. The reason I say that is when IBM acquired Red Hat, that was the same big banner thing that they said then. And the irony there is that Red Hat actually is still very much a subscription-based revenue kind of company. They don't, like, they're not cloud in terms of SaaS, they're cloud in terms of our stuff runs on cloud. Mm-hmm. And HashiCorp is the same kind of thing, even like dialed up to 11, because they, from memory, I think they did, up until that point, around about 13% of their revenue, I think, came from SaaS, and the rest of it is all effectively on-prem, although your on-prem could be in your cloud provider, just kind of subscription stuff. So I get what IBM is trying to do, because the other thing that I know is that Terraform accounts for more API calls on AWS than everything else combined, which is mind-blowing. Again, like, makes sense, but they were never able to monetize that, which is, it's another, if the acquisition hadn't happened, I wonder if that might have been another, you know, Docker type situation. Your tech is used by everybody, but you end up, you know, going down the toilet because you were never able to make the monetization strategy work.
Yeah, but some things just can't be monetized. I mean, the reason Terraform is so popular is because AWS heavily pushed it as the way to deploy your infrastructure there. And why did it pick on Terraform? Because it was free. The moment you start to monetize it, they'll pick something else. And while deployment methodologies are kind of complex, I mean, it's not simple stuff, but it's not rocket science either. It's not that hard to build something like that. It's hard to find a community, to find enough people contributing, to find enough connectors and things like that, and having a behemoth like Amazon push you forward. But apart from that, I mean, Puppet Chef, Ansible, Terraform, config management things, it's, they're all different, but doing the same thing. So,
CF Engine.
Well, I didn't want to mention because most people hate me with a vengeance, but I actually like CF Engine a lot. I spend a lot of time with it. But you mentioned the, I mean, for me, the IBM acquisitions, both of Red Hat and HashiCorp, to be honest, are the reason UK for Broadcom trying to stay relevant.
And no, I think that's absolutely 100%.
And they're doing it wrong. And of course, I know this because I am so good at everything and risk it and everything.
Yeah,
but for me, buying things that have a big open source slant and then really shutting those doors is not a smart thing to do. Because with Red Hat, they did the same thing. Now, Red Hat wasn't open source. Red Hat was a close, but it was based on open source and they contributed a lot to open source with CentOS and stuff. And I'm 100% convinced that the fact that CentOS is no longer a viable alternative today in the Linux market is because IBM is closing that hole.
Mm.
Which is stupid, because the reason Red Hat was everywhere is because CentOS was even more everywhere. And if you had CentOS running on everything already and you wanted something licensed, you're not going to put Ubuntu in there.
Mm.
You'll take Red Hat. I mean, it's the give it for free, the whole drug dealer thing, give the first hit for free and then they'll come paying afterwards, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it works for drug dealer, works for everything.
They have repeated, they have repeatedly said time and time and time again until they're red in the face, because I can't, although I suppose you could say blue in the face because they were acquired by IBM, that those two things were absolutely and categorically not linked. But it's difficult.
Well,
it's like
IBM didn't stop it. Same thing. And with HashiCorp, I think the change in license was very much not coincidental here, but because again, IBM simply doesn't want to be a steward of open source products at that level. Because to be fair, IBM has done quite a bit in open source.
Yeah, they have.
It's been a while that I looked at it, but they have contributed a lot of things. But
we've spoken on this podcast to a couple of folks from IBM who are luminaries in the open source world and have been for decades. So like they do have that open source mentality. I will give them that for sure.
The people have that mentality, but the company, the moment it becomes an IBM product, it's not IBM open source anymore.
Yeah, and IBM is such a behemoth. You know, it is still an absolutely ginormous organization. In fact, that reminds me of something that maybe we'll talk about next episode. But anyway, we're running a little bit long, so maybe we'll end up splitting this into two. But the final one that happened is kind of Lacework and Wiz being, Lacework being acquired by Wiz. And this one for me is just, this is the one of the examples that you mentioned a while earlier of a company just in trouble and just not doing well and making lots of bad decisions. If you hunt about on the internet, you will find a couple of articles that describe what was going on at Lacework over the last couple of years. It's fairly scary stuff. Reader caution advised. It's quite disturbing just how, from outside looking in, again, I have no inside knowledge of Lacework. I do know people that have been at Lacework who have shared stories about their time there. But again, that's secondhand information. I personally have no first-hand experience. But they just made a lot of bad decisions, continued to double down on bad decisions, ended up in a place where they were so cheap to acquire that they got acquired by their largest competitor. And it's, what can you say? Not a lot.
They started wrong from the start. Their only claim to fame was that Snowflake was investing in them. It was kind of a Snowflake subsidiary kind of thingy. And since Snowflake was a success, obviously this is going to be a success too. My own personal experience with them is limited to having a recruiter on LinkedIn contact me to see if I wanted to join them. And the only thing that was in there was how much money you'll make. Now, personally for me, money is important. Never say money is not important, but that's not why I would change a job. I want to know what the job's about and so on. And there was nothing about that. So for me, I immediately just,
didn't even accept the join.
Same thing, a couple of colleagues that went there, they didn't stay long. It's also the one in the four that is the least established. It was a young thing that just did things wrong. The other three were, established companies that kind of joined bigger companies again.
Yeah, very much so. And then, the final one that I think we throw into this episode and we leave you with, which I don't think it necessarily fits into either of or any of the categories that we've talked about yet in terms of the reasoning why, but maybe you can tell me, is back in April of this year, HPE announced that they are intending to acquire Juniper, which is kind of a legacy player acquiring a legacy, legacy hardware player acquiring another legacy hardware player.
I wouldn't call Juniper a legacy. They had some good stuff. It's years since I've actually worked with that stuff, but they were a lot better than Cisco and everything had in those days. So they had good stuff. And HPE does have a bit of a history of buying not defunct, but older hardware vendors. The desiccated corpse of Silicon Graphics also ended up in their embrace at some point. So I do see them just picking up hardware for cheap. I don't know.
Yeah.
Although cheap, it's going to be cheap.
I don't want to. Yeah, we kind of hinted towards some of the numbers here, but the Cisco acquiring Splunk, I think I mentioned, was $28 billion. The IBM acquiring HashiCorp was $6.4 billion. The HPE acquiring Juniper, who knows how many billion. I'm guessing the numbers will squeeze out later. But next episode, we're going to talk to you about IPOs.
I think this might have something to do with the Mellanox acquisition, because I know HP wanted to get Mellanox a while back, but NVIDIA kind of stole it away from them.
Maybe. So
this is maybe a second attempt of them to getting some kind of network stuff.
Maybe.
Sorry.
No problem. Well, as I say, we're running a little bit long. So unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a Patreon. Every contribution really does help. We are on YouTube. Come and join us and see Jon's beard waving. You can also subscribe, hit the notification bell, comment, do all the YouTube things. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about the podcast. Please do send your feedback and crazy conspiracy theories to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is, hi there, Facebook Dave.
And my name is, I'm going to start writing that acquisition document, takeover invitation document soon, Jon.
And we look forward to talking to you next week.
On the Roaring Elephant AI podcast.
God.
You've just doubled the value now.
Oh, dear. Yeah. AI washing the podcast now. No, never. All right. Cheerio.